Welcome, everyone, to the second episode of Checking the Gate, a film and religion podcast. As always, I'm Robert Wright Stasko, and joining me is my co-host...
Big Mike Patty.
Big Mike Patty. Big Mike. Today's episode, we are talking about Thor. This is a monthly podcast, but I thought we'd throw this bi-weekly episode at you, just because the movie is...
It's so recent, but if this came out a month from now, it would be stale, and I'm convinced this thing is going to drop like a stone, and nobody is going to watch it. This is week three. It's not making very good bank this week. Count on it.
Yeah, it's already made over $350
million. Oh, yeah, it raked in the cash overseas.
Yeah.
Which surprised me. I am surprised that this did so well. It seems like it's a C-grade character with not a lot of name recognition outside of comic fandom. But what do I know? I don't live overseas, so maybe he's more popular in Europe. I thought the movie was just okay.
Definitely not the best Kenneth Branagh film. Are you a Kenneth Branagh fan?
I have liked the handful of movies I've seen by him. I really liked Hamlet, which you recommended to me. I thought that was a phenomenal piece of filmmaking, just achievement in visuals. And you forget that it's heightened English and just get caught up in the story, and it looks amazing.
Yeah.
I highly recommend everyone check it out. I like Dead Again. That was just okay, too, but I enjoyed it. It has a neat twist at the end. I know I saw Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, but just the once, and I don't remember very much about it. And I also really like Much Ado About Nothing. That has a great cast, and it's very funny. Yeah. Everyone in it is fantastic.
I really like Much Ado About Nothing and Dead Again. I sort of classify his movies into his Shakespeare movies and his non-Shakespeare movies.
Mm.
And I find that his Shakespeare movies are so much better than his non-Shakespeare movies.
Did I forget Henry V?
Henry V
is fantastic.
That's one of my favorites. You know, especially that very long tracking shot where they're singing, "No, no, bis domine, domine." I love that Patrick Doyle did the music for all those movies.
And he did Thor.
He did Thor as well.
I remember sitting there thinking, man, this is good music. I wonder who did this. And then at the end, oh, of course.
Of course, Patrick Doyle. There's some of those Branagh elements there, but correct me if I'm wrong, but there was not like a really huge, awesome one-take tracking shot in this movie.
There was one, the cool CG shot where he throws the hammer through all the frost giants at once.
Yeah, but that was pretty quick.
It wasn't a long shot. And there were a couple nice aerial views of Asgard, like when they're riding the horses on the bridge.
Yeah.
That's not really what you're thinking, but those are probably the closest.
In Henry V, there's like where he's carrying a very young Christian Bale across the battlefield. There's the end of Much Ado About Nothing. That was like a 5-minute shot. You know, both of those are beautiful. And also in Hamlet.
There was some of that in Hamlet.
Yeah, it's very simple, like, pull-out where he's doing the monologue at the end of Act 1 and just pulling away. And I saw this at the Highland Theater in Akron in 70mm. I didn't know they made screens that big anymore. But it was beautiful. I remember just being blown away at this huge just field of white, and it was not quite an IMAX screen, but it was the biggest I'd seen.
The next best thing.
Yeah, and it was just gorgeous. It was beautiful. Yeah. And I missed that in Thor. I missed that sort of that cinematography that Branagh's known for.
I have a bad feeling that part of the problem that kept it just okay, or at worst mediocre, was three credited screenwriters, two story by writers, and I'm not entirely sure Kenneth Branagh had Final Cut. I'm pretty sure that Marvel is keeping a tight leash on some of these things because so many have turned out to be bad. Iron Man turned out good. I think Incredible Hulk turned out good. I have a feeling that's why they didn't invite Edward Norton back, because he likes having Final Cut, and they might have been afraid he would have wanted it on the Avengers.
Yeah.
And as such, you know, Marvel doesn't want a stinker on their hands, so they get involved, and it ends up being a case of too many cooks spoiling the broth. They keep it from being god-awful, but they keep it from being great also. I think that happened with Iron Man 2. The only good part of it was the end.
Yeah.
Thor was just okay.
Yeah.
You know, I never had any doubt that he wasn't going to get back to Asgard, that Odin wouldn't reclaim the throne.
I was kind of wondering if he was going to get the girl at the end, though.
They're saving that for Thor 2.
She did give him a pretty good smacker there.
My friend at work pointed out that when he's like, "I swear I'll come back for you," they've only known each other like 2 days.
Yeah. Well, he's the god of thunder. Everything is epic for him. You know,
he's immortal. He's got all the time in the world.
You fall in love quick, and then that eternity lasts a long time when you're separated.
So now I'm praying for the end of time,
yeah,
so I can end my time with you. Thank you for joining us for this week in Meatloaf.
I think definitely the fact that this movie is part of a larger continuity and there is a grander story being told.
Yeah, if there was no Avengers on the horizon, this would have been awful. This would have had no interest in it whatsoever.
Yeah, I think the fact that Kenneth Branagh did direct it and he did bring...
Yeah, the flaws of this movie are not with the direction, are not with the cast. It's solely with the writing and the pacing and the amount of action in it.
Because Branagh did... he did have input into the film.
It's a beautiful movie. The CGI, it never looks bad. Asgard is fantastic.
The set design is what
the
you
set
expect
design,
from a Branagh film. Definitely.
Every cast member literally is perfect for the roles, as little as they're given. Even the witty sidekick, it's a throwaway role, but she pulls it off nicely.
Yeah, well, Branagh encouraged her and brought that character out, gave more meat and substance to that role. From what I read, everyone signed into this movie without seeing a script.
That's because there was none.
They hadn't written it yet, which is they had faith in the director. And I think it's a credit to Kenneth Branagh that this movie didn't totally stink.
I really wanted to see it because of the pedigree. Kenneth Branagh, Anthony Hopkins, Natalie Portman, Idris Elba. Idris Elba was fantastic. I've seen him in a couple of things now, and he has just shown.
He was the best thing in the movie Losers.
He was the best thing in the movie The Losers. He was good on The Office. He was excellent in the... I don't know if, Robert, you got to see the BBC series Luther.
Yes.
That was
on BBC America.
Yes, it was. And it is now streaming on Netflix Instant Streaming.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
So check out Luther. It's pretty gritty.
Stellan Skarsgård.
Oh, yeah.
He's awesome in everything. Yeah. I'm thoroughly convinced that the guy who plays Loki, Tom Hiddleston, is going to be a huge star. This is his big break. Just every scene he was in.
He was a fantastic villain.
Perfect choice.
You sympathize with him. You hated him.
He was
the whole game
double-crossing everybody. Yeah. And
you know, he was very tricky, you know, in some of the things he did, so they kept his character the same. I have to admit, I'm not as much of a comic book geek as I would like to be, so I don't know how different this is from the actual comic book. His origin as a frost giant, it coincides with what is on the comic, right, Mike? You looked at that?
I still have the page up, and according to the fine scribes at Wikipedia headquarters, after slaying the king of the frost giants, Lofi, in battle, Odin found a small Asgardian-sized child hidden within the primary stronghold of the frost giants. The child was Loki, and Lofi kept him hidden from his people due to his shame over his son's small size. Odin took the boy because he showed strength when Odin slew his father in combat and raised him as his son alongside his biological son, Thor.
See, the movie is pretty close to what the comic is, but the comic is pretty far from the actual religion of the Norsemen.
Let me interject. Thor has as much to do with actual Norse mythology as reality television has to do with reality. You know, none.
You know, there's Thor, the god of thunder, and he had his hammer. You know, the outside things are the same. I didn't like how they sort of cheapened Odin's character. You know, Anthony Hopkins is great. He should play the father of the gods, but, like, he loses his eye fighting the ice giants. According to the Norse myth that I read as a child, he gave that up so he could see the events in the future. He's like, if I'm going to be the father of the gods, I need to know these things. His eye was like the ultimate boon. Joseph Campbell says this is the sort of thing that you see in Star Wars where Luke gets his hand cut off when he learns who his real father is. It's the ultimate boon, the price you pay for knowledge and wisdom. And that's not there in this movie. I think the only thing that Thor gains is a healthy respect for pacifism and a girlfriend. You know,
and those are both good things to have.
Yeah,
is make it, love, not war.
Is it the moral of your movie? see our last episode for our thoughts on that.
Yeah.
Here's a quote from a book, Norse Mythology A to Z, which you can find on Google Books. It's a free book. I will post the link in the show notes. We're talking about like the origin of Loki and how he was a frost giant. Here's how it's kind of similar to the actual myth. Here's the quote. The proto-giant Ymir was the first being in the cosmos, according to the 13th century writer Snorri Sturluson's version of the Norse creation myth. The details tell how Ymir evolved from the heat and the cold in the beginning of times, and from the part of his body were born the Hrimthursar, the rhyme giants, and at the same time that Ymir came into being, the first cow, Adhumla, formed out of the chaos. She licked a salt block and uncovered Buri, whose son Bor mated with Besla, one of the first giantesses. From these latter two, one giant came the first gods, Odin, Vili, and Ve. Okay, so there's Odin. He's actually descended from frost giants. And then when these brothers killed Ymir, his blood caused a flood that killed all of the rhyme giants, but Bergglamir and his wife, who survived to become the ancestors of all the giants. This shared ancestry of gods and giants has caused much curiosity among modern scholars, though no answers to this puzzle exist in surviving records. As you can see, Norse mythology is kind of convoluted and confusing.
I get the impression that the creators of the comic, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, what they probably did was they had a children's book of Norse mythology similar to the one that Stellan Skarsgård is flipping through.
Yeah.
And they watered that down for the comics, and then all of the screenwriters took a pass, and
yeah,
it got watered down even more, so that we have the telephone version of Norse mythology presented in this movie. Robert, do you know off the top of your head, are there people in Scandinavia for whom this is still a day-to-day, is this still an active religious belief?
Are there people still sacrificing to the pagan gods?
Ragnarokken?
I do not believe so. Norway, Sweden, Denmark, that area is like a very, very Christian area now. And I believe it's Sweden is very Lutheran. So there's this kind of conflict between people's ancestry and what their current beliefs are. I found another book on Google Books. I'll post a link. Norse Mythology, The Religion of Our Forefathers, where a guy named Professor Anderson tries to explain that the Norsemen were really Christian. I have an excerpt here. Oh, here it is, from his book. Our Norse forefathers, for it is their religion we are to present in this volume, had no clearly defined knowledge of any god outside of themselves and nature. Like ancient Greeks, they had only a somewhat vague idea about a supreme god, whom the rhapsodist or skald and the elder Edda, which is like the sort of Bible of Norse mythology, dare not name, and whom few, it is said, ever look far enough to see. And he gives some examples of some Norsemen who, like, it's a noticeable fact, he says, that long before Christianity was introduced, or had even been heard of in Iceland, it was recorded that Ingmund the Old, a heathen Norseman bleeding and dying, prayed God to forgive Rolif his murderer. You know, I think he's really grasping at straws. I don't know anything about Professor Anderson here other than he was a professor of Norwegian languages in the University of Wisconsin. And
when I think of linguistics experts, I think of Wisconsin.
Yeah, this book was published in like 1890 something.
So,
I think he was probably a settler, moved in, had taken a stroll down the Sawdust Trail, had a conversion experience. I think Professor Anderson is trying to reconcile his Christian belief and justify it. Oh, my ancestors are really Christian.
Going back to my thought about people actually practicing this nowadays, it occurred to me after I said that, this would probably be really offensive.
No, yeah.
If there were actual practitioners believing in Odin and Valhalla.
Oh, yeah.
this would probably be the Norse equivalent of, say, the Jesus Christ Vampire Hunter movie.
No, this happened. This is the Last Temptation of Christ.
Ah, that's a good comparison.
Yeah, I know some of the people in my church would probably string me up for saying this, but I like that movie.
I understand there's a long history of that in your faith.
Yes, yes.
Sorry, cheap shot.
That's the price you pay for being an Anabaptist. You know, everyone else wants to string you up. But in The Last Temptation of Christ, the Martin Scorsese film, when you watch it compared to other movies like Jesus Christ Superstar or Ben-Hur, or I don't think you even see Jesus.
I think you see him from behind.
Jesus Christ Superstar, like, he's a reactionary. He doesn't really do anything. And people sing and dance around
there
him.
There are no miracles performed in Jesus Christ Superstar.
Yeah.
And yet somehow it's perceived as a religious film.
Yeah, it really
or
isn't.
Or musical, even.
In The Last Temptation of Christ, Jesus performs a ton of miracles, some in the Bible and some are not, where he, like, pulls out his heart, you know, and holds out in front of his disciples. But that's from medieval imagery, the Sacred Heart. So I found Scorsese's version of Jesus to be much more, even more so than the one depicted in Passion of the Christ.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem people had with The Last Temptation of Christ is that it did things slightly differently. You didn't have the typical long-haired, bearded Jesus. You did have stuff that wasn't in the Bible. You did have him tempted by the devil. And if, for those who haven't seen it, the devil showing him what it would be like if he stopped performing miracles and didn't become a martyr, and how he would have a good life and be married. And at the end of the movie, he doesn't do it. He ends up getting crucified.
Yeah.
And they depict it more realistically, like the shape of the crucifix is not the standard, you know, straight.
Well, he got that from a medieval painting.
Right.
So he's looking more at the historical reality of it.
Exactly.
You know, what would it be to be divine and human at the same time? And for most people, it would sort of drive you crazy. And that's kind of how he depicts that Jesus and how he tries to resolve this conflict going on within him.
Yeah, but all the fundamentalists just want, that's not how Jesus looks. Jesus is a pasty white guy with long flowing brown hair and a goatee with two holes in his hands and walking on water. And everybody at the Last Supper all sat on the same side of the table.
Yeah, everyone has their own idea of who Jesus is. You cannot satisfy everyone. And to date, I have not seen an entirely satisfactory vision of Jesus on film.
I have. Dogma.
The Buddy Jesus?
Exactly.
The Buddy Jesus. I think I'll go to the ViewAskew store and order one to put on my dashboard.
You don't have one already.
No, I don't. I have to say, Buddy Jesus comes close. But what you were saying about Thor, this movie, if there's actually some pagans out there, I think Chris Hemsworth comes pretty close to a true cinematic vision of Thor as you can get.
If I may quote my wife, he's pretty.
Yeah. When we watch, like, Jesus in this movie or that movie, a lot of times he is too pretty. Even Jim Caviezel's too good-looking.
Willem Dafoe.
He's not good-looking at all.
No.
A lot of different Jesuses, they're just too good-looking. But Thor is supposed to be the god of thunder, and
yes,
you know, he's a very picture-perfect vision of Thor. Also, looking at the way they try and take this movie and make it understandable to modern audience, the Rainbow Bridge is how they go from Midgard, our realm, to Asgard and back and forth. They try and explain that it's an Einstein-Rosen bridge. It's a wormhole. Does that remind you of anything?
Where did the phrase Einstein-Rosen bridge come from? I've heard that before, but I couldn't place it.
That's from physics class is where you heard that. That's
okay.
An actual theory of how a wormhole can be created through a black hole. You have the Asgard who are traveling through wormholes, sort of like a Stargate kind of apparatus.
A what? I don't know what one of those is.
A Stargate? You never heard of that?
Isn't that the thing that they use to keep people out of the fancy nightclubs in L.A.?
When they started talking about the Einstein-Rosen bridges, I was like, that's too much close to Stargate SG-1 and what they did with the Asgard and Thor and all that. And they had Thor's hammer, which, you know, was supposed to trap all the Gould and kill the Gould, which were the bad guys in that TV show. So I don't know. I don't like when movies take these things that are supposed to be fantastic and magical and wonderful and try to explain it away to make it, okay, well, I can accept that. Like, so you have to suspend your disbelief. They try to explain it to hold on to it, and I don't think they have to do that.
Like midichlorians.
Midichlorians, oh, yes. Case in point right there. I think that rationalization like cheapens the wonder and mystery of having a god walk among us.
That's a very excellent point. Maybe if they'd done a little more of that, it would have added a little more character depth rather than melodrama, which
yeah.
the movie had in spades. What do you say we move on to TV Corner?
On today's TV Corner, we're going to bid a bitter farewell to V.
It went before its time, and it joins other quality two-season genre shows that just when you think they're getting warmed up, they're suddenly gone. Kind of like Jesus himself.
Yeah. Well, he lasted 3 years in his ministry, so he did one better.
All right. You heard it here first, folks. Better than V. It joins other dearly departed two-season genre shows that were gone before their time, like Pushing Daisies, Terminator, The Sarah Connor Chronicles, Human Target, which also went off the air like the same week, Sports Night, that wasn't a sci-fi show, but that went the
It was better
same.
Than everything else
it
on
was,
TV at the
it
time.
It was better than a lot of other crap.
Dark Angel. Earth 2.
I never saw Earth 2.
It was Clancy Brown was in it.
Yeah.
It was a very depressing show, and it deserved to be canceled. But,
But
yes, gone before its time. And this one really had an interesting religious angle to it in the character of Father Jack Landry. I really liked him.
I did too. Any listeners of this may be familiar with the miniseries Taken, which is where I first saw the actor Joel Grech, and he plays completely the opposite character. He plays a slimy government thug, kills a bunch of people, spends his whole life dedicated to keeping the mystery of alien invasion a secret, and it was refreshing to see him play
the total opposite.
The complete opposite. a man of faith. He had his convictions, but he wasn't always dedicated, whether it be to his faith, which I think added a little bit of depth to him, and at the same time to the rebellion he was a part of. All he really wanted was just to reconcile what he believed with the invasion, and he knew something had to be done, but he didn't want to do it with violence, and it was refreshing to see that type of character on a show with so much violence. It was a nice counterbalance. It wasn't just, oh, the aliens are here, let's go start gunning for them.
Yeah.
One of the big reasons I really liked it from the first episode was that you never knew who you could trust, and that there was a lot going on behind the scenes, and you know, there were never big reveals about, oh, I've been this way the whole time. The viewers were always aware of the machinations behind the scenes, and I loved that, and I'm going to miss it come fall.
They were able to reinvent themselves, not just at the end of every season, but every few episodes. They would go in a new and different direction and really kept you hooked. Through all that, yeah, Father Jack, he had his questions. He would question himself. He would question his faith, which everyone does. And in the end,
he never lost his faith, though.
Right. Right. He never totally lost it, but he would question it.
He always remained the grounded conscience of the fifth column. You know, if we cross this line, then we are murderers just like the Vs.
Yeah.
And we can't do all these things that Erica and Hobbs, as the leaders of the rebel group, wanted to do, the quick and easy path to winning, as opposed to what was right and fair.
Yeah. I think that it just goes to show you that even in our secular society, which there's some elements who seek to eliminate religion altogether, like, you know, Richard Dawkins and his ilk, like Christopher Hitchens and all them, who would be like, we'd be better off without religion. A show like this really demonstrates how you need some sort of spirituality to looking out to provide you that sort of ethical moral compass. Because time and time again, without a sort of belief in any sort of other, our ethics and morals go awry.
Well, let me posit this. Pretend for a moment that there was no Father Jack on the show, and that sense of spirituality wasn't there. We didn't have all the scenes in the church with the other priest. Do you think that if he wasn't in their group, what do you think would have happened?
What do I think would have happened?
Yeah, if the main characters had been Erica and Hobbs, Ryan.
Yeah, well, I think what would have happened is there would have been situations where it would, instead of having Father Jackson, wait, think about this, don't do this, and they change their mind about certain things, they would have gone ahead and done things and then regretted it later. Every time you commit a sort of act of violence or act against nature as a human being, you lose something. And you never get that back. And I think, yeah, these characters lose a lot of things along the way. But there's Father Jack, and he helps them restore some of these things, especially his relationship with Erica. When she goes too far, he offers forgiveness and redemption. You know,
and that's especially why the cliffhanger is such a big disappointment, because the last time we see him, he's taken up in Anna's... no, it's not Anna's. It's the little girl's.
Yeah.
Her bliss.
Yeah.
And Erica is not affected, so now he's hooked on V-juice.
He's been brainwashed.
Yeah. Yeah. I shouldn't say V-juice. I guess that's a thing on True Blood. Oh. We are never reviewing True Blood. I refuse to watch it.
I haven't watched it either, so... Yeah, I was really keen to see how it would have been if there was a third season, to see how Jack would come away from that experience and how he handles that in terms of his faith. They compared the bliss as sort of a drug that you get hooked on. Does he become like an addict? Does he need to get off of it? You know, does he turn to Ryan for help? You know, that would have been a very interesting thing to see.
Ryan got offed.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't. I have to watch it again. There's so much that happened. It was like one shock after another.
Yeah. And it wasn't enough.
Yeah. Yeah, there was just so much that happened, and like the cliffhanger of Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Oh man, that was the worst, because that
John Connor gets flung to the future, and no one knows who he is, and I felt the same way at the end of V, and I was that show was on the bubble.
Yeah, when the Sarah Connor Chronicles episode aired, you kind of knew it wasn't coming back. V, there was the hope.
There was hope. Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody was still talking about it. All of the cast members were saying, oh, we haven't heard anything, but we're all hopeful on Twitter. And then, nope, not a single bubble show got renewed by any network this year. Everything just got axed. And I lost 4 shows in the space of a week. V, Human Target, Smallville, which I knew was going off, yeah. And No Ordinary Family. None of the 3 that were doubtful got picked up. And that's not just shows I liked. It was just a firing squad. Everything sucks. Let's start over.
Yeah. I think the only couple shows that I watched, like Chuck was on the bubble, but that got renewed.
And it's going into its last season, because yeah. I'm quite certain they're tired of the will it or won't it at the end of every year.
Yeah. You know, that's pretty much science fiction, because a nerd like that, marrying a girl like that, that's never going to happen. Castle, which is not science fiction or anything with religion, but it's a fine show. It's a fun show.
Yes.
So,
I don't like the serious ones, though. Which yeah. Every season finale is.
Well, you know she's going to live.
What? Oh!
Spoiler
alert! Spoiler alert! yeah. Somebody pointed out that her boyfriend is a heart surgeon, and she got shot near the heart.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. Yeah, so we know.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, this is what happens when you're too smart and you're in Mensa. You figure these things out. But anyways, I think that wraps up our TV corner for today.
Yeah, the dead horse we've been beating for is the last 15 minutes is starting to stink. We gotta haul it out of here.
Yeah, and then it'll regenerate so we can beat it again.
Yes! Gotta love Gallifreyan horses.
All right. Hey, for next time, why don't we do a Superman Super Special? We'll look at Superman Returns for the movie in honor of the new Superman box set that's available on Blu-ray, just released this month. And on next TV Corner, I think we'll look at Smallville and Superman and the sort of Messiah thing that goes on there.
Yes, it is ripe for dissection.
And we'll reflect on the 10 seasons that was our favorite show at times. So if you want to see what other movies we'll be covering, you can check out our FAQ page. And that is at our website on www.ctgpodcast.com. You can leave us your comments at ctgpodcast@yahoo.com. Give us your suggestions, and we'll be happy to talk about those on the podcast. Also, check us out on Twitter and Facebook at Checking the Gate Podcast. So until next time, this is Robert saying keep the faith, and
Mike saying peace out.